It's the Lost Years Pod. Lost Years Pod. Running through this show called Boy Meets World is what we're doing. Sid and Tay are your friends who will always stand by you. It's the Lost Years Pod.
Hello and welcome to the Lost Years, a retrospective fan cast. I'm Tay.
I'm Sid.
And this is season 5, episode 19.
Yeah. Here we are.
Here we are. We're doing it. It's happening. And you know what? What are you nostalgic for this week?
All of my school libraries growing up.
Just every single one.
Every single one. Because I was going to do my elementary school one. And then I thought about how different my middle school and high school ones were. And I just really loved all of them.
That's amazing.
And I think back to how many times that we would take trips down to the library, and it was always really exciting, and they gave you specific library time to just kind of wander.
Was your computer time in the library?
It was attached. It wasn't like in the library itself, but we always kind of had a computer room that was next to it.
Computer lab, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what they're called. They had a name.
They did have a name.
Not just the computer room, it's computer lab.
The computer lab, because it was a laboratory. No, I had, in middle school, I think all of our computers were in the library. And then when I got, no, elementary school, they were in the library. When I got to middle school, we had computer lab.
That's exciting.
I think we had computer lab the whole time, but there was a specific room for it.
Yeah. But they were all just really unique design for one. Like, I don't know why. They all just stick out. My elementary school one was a big square, and it had such high ceilings. And when you're a small child, you're like, oh, my gosh. It felt so wonderful.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. When I got to middle school, it was a little bit more retro looking, but it made us feel like a little bit older. So that was cool. And then high school was just huge. So it was fun to go around. But yeah, I don't know. I was thinking back to just all of the class times that I would have there and how insanely wonderful libraries are and how it just felt really cool to go find any book that you wanted to. And like specifically having to look them up on the computers. And I know like in elementary school and middle school, like our announcements, our daily announcements were filmed in those areas too.
Cute.
Like they had little rooms off of them. Or like we had a stage for some reason in our library in middle school, but it was filmed on there. And so it was just really unique. I miss all the old librarians too. I don't really know who's still there, but it's fun. I miss it. And then I think like I could just go to the library now, which I do.
But it's different.
It's different.
Not the same. Yeah. It's not the same as your school library for sure.
And it was so cool to have like mandated library time.
Yeah. Like
you're going to go, you're going to find stuff, you're going to read stuff, and you're going to have a wonderful time. I miss that.
I love that. I also feel very fondly for the libraries of my youth. the one that I remember, they changed the way that all of the schools in my district worked right around the time that I was in third grade. So originally there were two elementary schools that were first through fifth, and then there was one school that was 6, 7, 8. And they built another school attached to the 6, 7, 8 school, and then they split the two elementary schools. So then you would go to one school for kindergarten through third, kindergarten through second grade, and then one from third to fourth, one from fifth to sixth, and then one from seventh to eighth.
Okay.
And I got very lucky because my school switched to being, because of the like year that I was in, it switched to being 3-4 after I had started, like when I started my third grade year going in. So I didn't have to leave my school, which was great. So we had that library, and again, very similar where we had like dedicated library time.
Yeah.
And that was where our computers and stuff were. And the one that I remember the most is my fifth and sixth grade library, because originally it had to fit 6, 7, 8, that school. So that library was huge.
Yeah.
It was so, so big. And it had this like big set of like bay windows that had a bunch of like cozy seats next to it. And that was my favorite place to go sit. And that's also where our computers were at the time. And I just really love that library. I feel like it's the one that when I think about being a kid and going to the library, that's the library I envision the most.
Yeah.
But I think I spent the most time, just a concerted time in my high school library Because I broke my ankle sophomore year. And after that, that is where I like did all of my lunches and my gym class and stuff. They were just like, go to the library. And so, one of my school librarians was also one of the like local librarians at my neighborhood library. So I would go to school library, but then also if I was going to local library, I would see her there too. And they just loved me and I loved them. And they gave me, around the time that I was in high school is when, The Fault in Our Stars came out. Mm-hmm. And I remember waiting for it to come in, getting it, reading it. And then at the end of the year, I was like, oh man, I just like wish I had a copy of this book because I loved it so much. She was like, we have so many. Do you want me to just give you one? And I was like, queen, yes, of course I do. And I still have that copy of the book.
Aww.
So, you know, librarians and libraries truly make the world go around. And not to be dramatic, but they're under attack these days. And it's exhausting. And I see a lot of it being that I work in a library association. So, yeah, I love that. That's such a... I feel very sentimental now about libraries and librarians.
I really love two things. One, in high school, it was also really fun because there were certain classes where... I don't even know if they do this anymore, but you used to have, like, laptop carts. And I don't know if you guys had that, but it was like you had to, your class had to rent them out.
Yeah, you had to check out the laptops.
Yeah, and they were always in the library. And so if your class did it, typically like if the teacher forgot or something, or they just wanted a student to go get it, there would be like a designated student, or like they'd be like, Sydney, go get the laptops. And it'd be like, all right. And so you had to like go on the adventure just through the hallways and be like, got to push back the laptop cart. But with my elementary school, this is a testament to how good this library was. They remodeled the school in my fifth grade year. So we had a weird time. We were in like trailers, like the classroom trailers, while the rest of our school was being demolished. And it was a weird time. But the one thing that they kept was the library, because the library is a staple. And I lived at the time right across from my elementary school. And so I always think about just growing up and seeing my school. Obviously, it's hard not to, but specifically that library is the first thing that you see on the road. And so it's really fun. And I just love it. I miss it.
I really miss, man, I lived so close to like all of my schools that when I, which I'm never in my hometown anymore because my parents moved away from it, but I was in it for my friend's wedding last year, and we were driving around to just like run errands and stuff. And I was like, oh my God. There's my library. There's my school. There's the Culver's we used to go to. They built that Culver's when we were in like seventh or eighth grade.
Yeah.
And so it just became the like place you would go to after school because it was literally a block away. Man, I just miss being a child sometimes.
Yeah, what are you nostalgic for?
The Lion King.
The movie?
Yes.
Not the musical.
I mean...
Like
no,
not the
movie.
Not the Broadway.
Yeah. The movie. And mostly not even really as much the first one as I am the second one, which is kind of funny.
Okay.
But and the reason this got brought up is because one of my friends sent me a TikTok today that was like behind the scenes video of the voice acting from the movie, which was just delightful. And now the music is in my head and I just love to see it. I think the Lion King is such a like staple of Disney animation, and like fuck Disney right now. Disney is problematic, but they did make some bangers back in the day.
They did.
They just did. It was like sort of mid Disney animation renaissance, I want to say, but it was one of their obviously very big titles. I didn't look up anything about the Lion King. I'm just talking about the Lion King, so please don't. It's fine. But specifically the first Lion King, beautiful, perfect, amazing movie, gorgeous, stunning animation, great story. It's Macbeth.
Yeah.
Have you seen The Lion King? It's Macbeth. but it's so good. And then the second Lion King, not Macbeth. I don't know if that's based off anything besides making more money for the Lion King franchise.
Vibes.
Vibes, truly vibes. But it's got one of the best, I think, animated movie sequences of all time in the not one. I don't remember the name of it. I think it's Not One of Us. I don't think it's called Deception, but it's Deception, Disgrace, that song.
I don't know the name of that song.
I think it's called He's Not One of Us or something like that. I'm almost positive that's true. but it's so good. It's like, I was obsessed with that movie. I don't know why. I would like, it was one of the movies as a kid that I would watch over and over again and like act out, but it was hard because they were animals. So I was like on all fours, crawling around being a lion. Like... And I just loved the story. I thought it was so interesting and so silly. but also just like really fun. And the music was still very good in that one as well, obviously, as I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. I just really liked, I loved the idea that there was an entire sect of lions, like that we didn't see in the first movie. There was an entire sect of lions that were like Team Scar, even though that was deeply not true. But they just like rewrote history. They're like, Scar, man, Scar really had it. He had the good ideas. He had the right ideas, even though Scar's whole retinue was hyenas the whole time. But it was just so, it was so fun and silly. And the music was really good. And I loved that it was the first, obviously the first Lion King was focused on Simba. That was a boy lion. You know, I was a girl. So I was all for Nala's, not Nala, what's her name? Kaya? I think it's Kaya.
I haven't seen this movie in so long.
I know. And now I want to look it up. Hold on. Would you believe the plot of The Lion King 2 is influenced by Romeo and Juliet? It's Shakespeare too. I didn't know it was Shakespeare.
The Lion King is just all Shakespeare.
It's all Shakespeare. That's so funny. That's so funny.
Huh. I wonder if 1.5 is based on anything.
That's so funny. Kiara was her name. Kiara and Kovu.
Kovu.
Kovu. Kovu. That lion? Hot. I'm sorry.
He is. Like, that's like a big thing on the internet too, isn't it?
Yeah.
But he's like, yeah. Oh no, I love a lion.
I love a
lion. I'm attracted to a lion.
Literally, not to be a furry, but Kovu? There's only 3 times in my life I've ever been like, oh no, I'm attracted to a big furry animal. And that was one of them.
Voiced by Jason Marsden. So yeah, there you go.
What a just deeply phenomenal movie. Anyway, I love The Lion King 2, mostly. Lion King 1 is also extremely good, and I love that movie as well. And yeah, that's what inspired this nostalgia. But yeah, Lion King.
When movies do, I mean, obviously, they do so well that there's a demand to then be like, here, on the certain anniversary, 20th anniversary, we're going to re-release it in theaters so you can go see it. And this happened with me with The Lion King. And mm-hmm. the coolest thing about that was when that got re-released, I had never actually seen The Lion King in theaters because when it came out, I was small. I didn't go to it. I remember going to Mulan all the time, but I didn't go see The Lion King in theaters. And so then seeing it on the big screen, you're like, oh my God, how? Like Disney knocked it out of the park in the 90s for sure. And I really don't think that they're ever going to get back to that point, but whatever.
No, unfortunately, they just keep reselling the same thing and not making like interesting new things, which they used to do all the time.
Which is what made Disney the coolest Disney.
Right.
Give me new storylines that I can follow and then you can build on that. But now they're like, here, how about our media empire? No, I don't need it.
I don't need it. I didn't ask for it.
And the worst part is then when they decide to give things a sequel and then they're not good.
Yeah. Sometimes they do really good sequels that like Toy Story 2 was great. Toy Story 3 was phenomenal.
Yeah, and they should have
And then
stopped.
They couldn't just let it die.
No.
They couldn't let it die. And now they're doing what? Toy Story 5?
I mean, not all of the sequels also needed a theatrical release, I think is what is nuts. Because we
Lion
used
King
to have...
2 was direct-to-video.
Yeah, we used to have all the direct-to-video ones that were always... I mean, not always, but a lot of them were just also bad in comparison to the first one.
Yeah, they were
just
less good, and that's fine.
They're just a chintzy little story that they threw at you. And they're fun. I don't know. They need to stop.
They need to stop. They need to stop.
Like, I remember when they said, we just talked about this in our group chat a little bit ago, but like Moana 2, when that got announced, I was like, I liked Moana a lot. I don't need a second one. I think sometimes it's also okay to just let stories be one story.
Yeah.
It's okay.
You could just let it exist in the space and it can be beautiful. Also, Lin's not even doing that one.
So what's the point?
Which was 80% of why it was good. So I've heard. I've never seen Moana. Nobody yell at me.
They don't need a lot of the movies that they're coming out with. It's whatever. That being said, franchises that do work, it's awesome. Because Shrek 2 is getting re-released in theaters as their 20th. And I am really excited for that. Because again, I think that it is a perfect movie.
Shrek.
It's great.
It's very good. It's just very funny that you like Shrek so much.
It's good.
It is. I agree with you. They've made 1,000 Shrek movies.
And they're making another one. And that's actually the one series that I am like, you know what? Fine. Keep making them.
Is it still?
We watched 4 together.
Yeah, we did.
And that one was actually fairly good.
Hotel room.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
3 is bad. 4 is good.
So funny. There's so many Shrek movies and so many Shrek spinoffs. There's like 1,000 spinoffs.
Yeah.
God, that's funny. That's so funny. I love that so much. Okay, well, should we get into it?
Yeah. I like how before we started this one, we're like, let's keep this short. And then both of our things were...
We just tangented. Very long. It's fine.
Yeah. Season 5, episode 19 is titled Eric Hollywood. The episode aired on March 20th, 1998. It was directed by Alan Meyerson and was written by Barbie Feldman. Barbie. And the synopsis is, Eric's desire to act lands him a role on a TV show, while Sean questions whether he should remain friends with Topanga.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yep.
Yeah.
It actually covers exactly what we're going to talk about, so it's awesome. Yeah.
And I will say, me and Sid were talking about this before we started recording, but I did say that there were no more filler episodes this season. This
Lies. Is
a filler episode. I'm sorry. I forgot about this one. That said, there is a teeny bit of plot sprinkled in. Just a smidgen for flavor, but this is mostly filler. It's still kind of funny.
Yeah.
As far as filler episodes go, it's pretty silly and fun. And I wasn't mad about it, but it isn't what we've been talking about for the last like 6 episodes. So
you want a deep message, do not watch this episode.
You're not getting one here. So the first scene, we are at Pembroke. That is like the exterior shot of Pembroke is what we get. So Eric is doing set on a school play. He says to a girl in costume nearby, "Without me, Judy, your pretty little legs wouldn't have a balcony to stand on." She asks if it's secure, and he says, "That baby's as secure as I am." She gives him a look, and he's like, "Why? What? You don't think I'm secure?" We then hear a big crash in the background and someone moaning in pain. She runs over and says, "Oh, Dylan, are you okay?" Holding his head. Dylan is buried in pieces of the balcony. He says, "I've got no feeling in my arms or legs." Judy says, "Oh, great. Now I've got no Romeo," and drops his head and storms off. He seems to go unconscious as an elderly man comes out and asks who built the balcony. Eric says, "Okay, in retrospect, it might have been foolish of me to consider Paste a Nail's silent cousin. But you live and you learn." The old man says, "I've got 400 people coming, not to mention Mr. Joffrey Minnell, the esteemed theater critic from The Penny Saver." Do we think this is a call or a reference to Jeff Minnell?
I did not even think about that, but maybe.
I thought about it immediately. I was like, hey, that name sounds familiar. He asked Eric what he should do, and Eric's like, "Well, you're really old. Why don't you retire?" Which is funny. The old director goes over to Dylan, who's unconscious on a stretcher and being shock revived by EMTs, and asks, "Are you sure you can't go on?" He is shocked, and the director says, "What about just the matinee?" They start to wheel him away as Eric says, okay, I'll get some tights and take these funny little booties here." He takes them off of Dylan's body. The director says, "You, Romeo? Tis to laugh." Eric says, "Tis it," then performs a monologue from Romeo and Juliet that is romantic. I'm not going to do the whole thing here. The director sighs, "Oh my, that was exquisite." And Eric's like, "Yeah, well, I've been building this balcony since the first rehearsal. I can do the whole play. I can do Lady Capulet. I can do Friar Lawrence. I can do Cartman. I am not fat. I am festively plump." The director tells him to go put on tights, and he's like, "Okay, but I do have the part, right?" And that's the end of the scene.
I love that Eric is getting into theater. I don't know if this is going to stick. I'm assuming not, because that
certainly
tends
not
to be what happens with Eric.
No.
But yeah, it made me happy to have a theater episode, just yeah. even briefly. The man is fully paralyzed on the ground.
No one's concerned.
No one's really helping him. They're all just like, "Great, now the show's ruined." And
yeah.
he's fully
this
dying.
This poor kid who was crushed by set pieces. Can't feel his arms or legs, and no one cares.
They're trying to resuscitate him on a stretcher, and again, no one really cares. They're just like, "But yeah. what about the play?
Oh, the play. The show must go on."
Let's not. I like that Eric just, again, can recite that entire monologue. I love how Will does it, because he also yeah. gets really close to the teacher or professor or whoever's doing this, this old man.
This old director man.
And I don't understand why they keep doing the South Park references.
I don't either.
I don't know what happened there.
It's very weird, but they've done like, what, 4 in the last 3 episodes? And it's crazy.
Yeah. Like, it was funny a little bit in that one. But the fact that they specifically called out this character, they're like, "I can do that impression." It's like, Will, who cares?
Why? And for what? Yeah. Was there a deal with South Park? What's going on?
No idea.
Okay, so the next scene, we are at the play. Eric and Jack are performing. Jack is in the play. That's fun. It's mm-hmm. a scene where Romeo confronts Tybalt for killing Mercutio. I'm not going to type it out, but it is pretty good Shakespeare. I enjoyed it. They draw swords, and when they connect, Eric whispers, "Prepare to die, Jedi Master." And then we transition into another scene. They're bowing, and the director says, "Bravo, Eric. I haven't seen such raw talent since I directed Meryl Streep in the 1977 senior class production of The Meryl Streep Show." understand.
I don't know why.
The context of this at all. Judy tells him he was amazing, and he's like, you didn't like me at all before I became Romeo, did you? He takes her hand and leads her back to stage and continues, but now all these people are applauding for me, and that impresses you. You know there's a name for people like you. They're both, like, smiling, accepting the applause, and through that smile, she says, really? What? And he says, Mrs. Eric Matthews. He hands her the bouquet he was given, and they take another dramatic bow, and that is the end of the scene.
Yeah, these are really quick little scenes. I really like that Jack is in theater, too. Like, he's just involved. They didn't establish that at the beginning of the last one, but all of a sudden he's just on stage.
Playing a pretty big role in Romeo and Juliet.
I love in the context of this, like, they're just at college and they're both just doing something kind of together, but not actually. Like, he wasn't supposed to be in the play, Eric, right. I mean.
Yeah, he's building sets and Jack was in the play.
Yeah, it's just a cool little bonding thing that they get to do together, and I appreciate that. I also really like that the boys are just doing Shakespeare and they are also great at it. Because Shakespeare is pretty difficult.
It's hard, for sure.
When you're, from an acting standpoint, like, I did Midsummer Night's Dream in high school, and it's confusing. When, like, you also just don't, if you don't fully grasp it, and then having to understand, like, how to say certain lines and how to, you know, react to other people's lines, like, it's just, it can be complicated. So I just respected the fact that they were doing it, and they're doing it well. And I understood it just as a viewer.
Yeah. Which I saw Romeo and Juliet for the first time like 2 years ago. I went with Liz and Cincy.
Yeah.
And it was really fun to watch just like traditional Shakespeare and also be like, I get what's going on.
Yeah.
Because everybody knows the story of Romeo and Juliet, right? But like nobody, unless you see the play, like you read it in high school, but you're never like thinking about Shakespeare. Like, nobody's thinking about Shakespeare except for people who do Shakespeare regularly.
Right.
And so it's really fun to, like, sit down and watch a play and be like, wow, this is good. I like it. And also, I understand it, mostly. Yeah. Like, I really like when people can make Shakespeare enjoyable and accessible, because that's really hard to do.
And it's also really noticeable when the actors or actresses are trained in the Shakespearean old theatrical style. Because, example, Bill Daniels is one of those people. And his acting versus other people's acting are on, like, two different levels completely. Yeah, and some with, like, Ian McKellen and, like, Patrick Stewart and just all of those people that kind of grew up with that literal Shakespearean education.
Very
different scale. And so I really appreciate when people are able to do that, because dang, we're just keeping it going.
we're just vibing out here. Next scene, we are in the Matthews kitchen. Eric bursts in the door, and the family sans Corey is sitting at the table. He says, I have finally found my niece. Alan corrects him, you mean Nietzsche? And he shrugs, probably. Alan says, unbelievable. Amy's like, these reviews are incredible. Eric says, Mom, if you're gonna pay attention to the good reviews, you gotta look at the bad ones. Morgan says, but there are no bad ones. And he giggles, I know, and sits in the chair with her. Amy starts reading review headlines. Matthew's King Lear rules. Matthew's performance would tame any shrew. She turns to him, promise me you won't let these things go to your head. Eric replies, I would never. Amy then notices an ad for a white sale at Bloomingdale's in the paper, and Eric grabs and crumples and throws it on the ground while yelling, that's not about me. We get a reaction shot from the parents, and Morgan, like, that actress is trying so hard not to break character and laugh, and she's failing, and that's the end of the scene. It's very funny, though.
That was what I enjoyed about this scene, is that I know you can very clearly tell that the actress that's playing Morgan is trying not to laugh, but I feel like Lindsay, Will, and Betsy are all trying not to laugh, like, just keeping that face.
Yeah,
and it's very, like, funny, because his reaction is so over the top.
It's so big and so funny. And Eric, Will Friedle, is just, like, holding it very, very in character. And it's great. It's great to watch.
I also love whenever he has the tiniest little intentional line flubs, saying the wrong words, like him just coming in and saying, I finally found my niece. It's the little things like that that I also really love just about his character, because they do it all the time, but it's just funny. I like when they give him stuff.
Niece niche is a running joke,
really.
Yes, it comes back.
Amazing.
Okay, so the next scene, we are back at the apartment. Sean is yelling to Jack to basically hurry up. Corey's going to be here like now. As the door buzzes, he opens it and it's Topanga. He asks what she's doing there and she says, there's something I want to talk to you about, and walks into the apartment. He says, well, actually, we were on our way out. And she continues, I just want to make sure you and I are okay. He hesitates but says, yeah, you and I are okay. Why? She starts, well, I know since Corey and I broke up, things have been kind of weird between us. I care about being your friend. Jack then walks out and she goes, Jack, what happened to your face? He says, apparently she doesn't care about being my friend. Sean says, we're on our way to a basketball game. Now's not the time to be making fun of Jack's face. She says, no, he's not going anywhere. Those look like chicken pox. Do they itch? Jack now has a mirror to look at his face, which is covered in dots, and says, no, not really. However, these are a little irritating, exposing his arm, which is also covered in dots, and starts scratching. She says, all right, you've got it. This is serious. If you don't take care of these now, you could get really sick. He goes, I don't want to die. Sean cuts in, nobody's dying. We are going to the game. The door buzzes and he finishes, that's Corey. Topanga yells, no, Corey, don't come in here, and like slams into the door. Outside, Corey says, okay, Topanga, what are you doing in there? She chains the door, but he tries to open it anyway. As Sean says, she's trying to keep us from going to see the Sixers. She yells, Corey, they have chicken pox. Run away or you could catch them. Sean goes, save your breath, Topanga. He's not going to listen to you. He unchains and opens the door to see an empty hallway with the elevator closing and Corey presumably inside of it. Sean says, I can't believe how whipped that boy is. And what do you mean they have chicken pox? Jack from the counter again says, I don't want to die. Topanga closes the door. You're not going to die. I'm going to stay here and take care of both of you. Jack has full-blown chickenpox and you have half-blown chickenpox. Sean laughs. That is so ridiculous. Okay, if I have chickenpox, where are my dots? She lifts up his shirt and there are so many dots on his torso. Should I connect them for you? Jack says, oh man, you're dying worse than I am. Sean starts, I feel fine, so I have dots. Topanga rebuts, that's because it hasn't hit you yet. When I had it, I had dots, a fever, and I could barely stand on my own 2 feet. Sean's like, at any point during the sickness, did you ever get quiet? She gives him a look and says, I'll excuse that because I know you're sick. He says, I am not sick. I have never felt better. And starts through the door, but then stops. Or perhaps I have. Put out your arms now. He collapses into her and they both fall down onto the couch. And that is the end of the scene. They have chicken pox.
They have chicken pox. I am blessed to have never gotten chicken pox before.
Me neither.
Because vaccines. And that's a note that I had. It's just a reminder to get vaccinated, folks, because they do work.
That's so crazy. They do work.
But yeah, I like, obviously the scene is about chicken pox, but at the same time, I respect the fact, and I feel kind of bad about the fact that Topanga went over just to make sure that they're okay and their friendship is okay.
Yeah.
Because breakups are tough, but especially like breakups in friend groups are also really tough. And trying to navigate that. And so I feel bad that she has to go over and be like, are we good? And like, I'm happy that she was there because ultimately she's helping take care of them. But
yeah,
it's just it's a bummer feeling to have.
I think about that scene in season 3, right after Topanga cuts her hair and Sean goes into the bathroom with her and is like, so I know these two people. And I guess you could call them my two best friends in the world. And I'm like,
Sean, remember
talking to her. You guys are in a weird... And also last week when he was like apologizing for the drunkenness and stuff and gave her like a kiss on the cheek and everything, like clearly they have a relationship outside of Corey. I mean, he was the first person she told that she was moving away.
Yep.
Like there's all this stuff, right? And so to have this sort of disconnect that Topanga's feeling, like I really love that they're going into it because it is sort of the first time that their relationship is fundamentally changed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tough place to be. I'm glad they're talking about it.
It's also just kind of sad because you can tell that he does not want to talk about it.
Yeah,
because
sure.
He keeps trying to be like, no, we gotta go. Like,
I'm glad she's talking about it, I guess.
But yeah, I think it goes back to how you were saying at the end of the episode where he apologized and then did the little kiss on the cheek. But when he was in that more drunken state and was very much like he was upset with her.
Yeah, for sure.
And was very open about that it's like, I know that not all of these episodes carry over to one another because sometimes they just don't. But yeah. I like to believe that this one does. And it's like a part of the bigger story of all of them and having to learn how to get along and stuff. But like, clearly he's hurt and he just doesn't want to confront that either. And I do know that they're best friends. And so it's tough.
Yeah. Mm. It's good. This B story is like definitely, I mean, it's called Eric Hollywood. So we know what's going on. But yeah. Okay, so the next scene, we are at the theater. The parents and Feeny have come to see Eric perform, and now, after the show, he comes out to greet them. They clap and hug him, and Alan says, the real tragedy tonight is that William Shakespeare couldn't be here to see how good you are. Eric laughs, he'll come tomorrow. I mean, we're here all week. Alan sighs, unbelievable. Amy says, I cannot believe how deeply you feel up there, Eric. I mean, when you jumped into Ophelia's grave, overcome with emotion, and then wept openly, where did you get your motivation? Eric pulls the play out and says, they got it right here in the script. Looked. weeps openly. I mean, they tell you what to do. Phoebe says, indeed, a true thespian. The director then comes out, calling out to him, Eric, there are some gentlemen here that want to talk to you about your future. He and Phoebe walk up to the stage to greet these men, and they start to introduce themselves. First one, Randolph Dixon. I can't read my notes. The first one says, Randolph Dixon, Juilliard. Eric turns to Phoebe. What's that? He says, the most prestigious acting school in the country. Second one says, Sir Ralph Cramdenson. His name's RSC. And Eric again asks, what's that? And Phoebe says, Royal Shakespeare Company, the most famous theatrical company in the world. Third guy pushes through, Matt Frazier, ABC. Now Phoebe says, what's that? And Eric says, American Broadcast Company, the number one network alphabetically in the world. Which is really funny because it literally is just alphabetically the first one.
Yeah.
Frazier continues, how would you like to come to Hollywood and be on television? Eric says, me, in the TV. He turns to look at Phoebe excitedly while Phoebe looks sort of put off, and that's the end of the scene.
Oh no, a prestigious theatrical route versus a TV route. I don't know which one Eric's going to pick.
Golly, who could imagine?
Interesting. What I do like about this episode, just in this A story, is that Eric is a talented individual. And I know that they, again, don't carry over this just in other episodes, but I love when he gets recognized as such. And I love when they give him his flowers as such. I really love that his parents are very proud to see him. And I love that Phoebe is also there and he's also proud.
Best friends.
Yeah, it's just besties. It's just fun. And it's crazy that he's that good. That they're like, hey, we want you at Juilliard. Hey, we want you at the World Shakespeare
Company. Also, how much time has passed? Because he's doing a different Shakespeare play. Because Ophelia is... So that's not Romeo and Juliet, which is the play he was doing before.
They're just whipping out these...
They're just doing Shakespeare. They're just doing lots of Shakespeare plays.
In the fastest way possible.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Just doesn't make any sense. Okay, so the next scene, we are in Hollywood. It's just a montage of Eric and Phoebe driving around like a stage lot. I think that's what they're called. I don't know for sure.
Hold on. Ophelia's in Hamlet.
Hamlet. Okay, I didn't know if it was King Lear or Hamlet.
Yep.
I knew it wasn't Macbeth, but I wasn't like, I didn't know which one it was. Mm-hmm. Nobody tweeted us.
We know.
We know. It's fine. They're seeing all the sound stages for various shows. It's like Third Rock from the Sun and what was the other one? Seinfeld. I think. Mm-hmm. I didn't write it down because I don't care. They're seeing like actors and prop people and then pull into a lot for a show called Kid Gets Acquainted with the Universe. It looks very similar to the original Boy Meets World logo. Eric says, I'm home. This is where I belong. Thanks for coming with me, Mr. Feeney. It would have been so uncool if my parents came. Which I think is hilarious because you instead brought your very old mentor. Why is that less embarrassing for you?
Because they're best friends.
They're best friends. Feeney says, I'm just here to see that you get settled. Now remember, keep both your feet on the ground. This town is swimming with sharks. Eric goes, hey, stop attacking my town. The people here are real down-to-earth, good, kindly folk. We then hear someone yell, hey, get out of my space. And we see someone who looks like Morgan driving another go-kart ramming into theirs. Eric says, hey, here's one of them now. Hi, nice person. She rams again. What do I have to do? Call my attorney? Get out of my space. She rams a final time and their cart like rolls away. And she says, thank you. Feeney replies, you're welcome. And who might you be, little girl? She yells, I'm not a little girl. I'm 42. I just play little girls on TV. She starts to walk into the soundstage, but before she does, she stops to pinch Eric's butt and go, hello. Phoebe says, Eric, are you sure you want to go through with this? And Eric says, more than anything. And that's the end of the scene.
Yeah, I did have to do a double take at that being Lindsay.
Yes.
It's just very funny. It's one of those instances, and spoiler for like the rest of this, but it's funny to see them not be in their characters.
Yeah.
And this is a moment for sure that Lindsay's not in her character that we all know.
For sure. As much as this episode is filler, like the actors do get to do a lot of playing in it that I think is really fun to watch.
Yeah. I think just driving around the back lot because they can and showing off Hollywood because they can. ABC. Because
this is clearly their lot. Yeah. Like, that they're driving around
they're just hanging out.
It's very silly.
I understand. You kind of mentioned this. I understand that they are in Hollywood while they're filming the show in general, but I love the in-universe plot that Feeney is the one that he took.
Yes.
And like he opted to also go with him because like Feeney could have just said no, but he's like, Feeney's whatever.
Like he has a job.
Yeah. He's just going to Hollywood with
Feeney
Eric.
Feeney got a substitute teacher so he could take Eric to Hollywood.
It's just very funny to me. But I really did lose it at King Gets Acquainted with Universe.
Yeah, extremely fun. Okay, so the next scene. We are back in the apartment. Jack is laying on the couch with his head in Topanga's lap while she tearily reads the end of a sad book, question mark. Jack is also teary, so she hands him a tissue. Sean from the kitchen is scratching himself on a bunch of different appliances and says, okay, Topanga, that's very nice. My brother and I appreciate everything you're doing, but we're all better now. So the next time we get chicken pox, we'll give you a call. She just replies, Sean, stop scratching. He grits his teeth, but like slowly stops scratching and says, Topanga, I really don't want your help. Jack sits up and says, well, I do, Sean. Topanga's a good nurse. My fever's down to malaria level. I think I can go back to my village now. He falls backward and she says, he's delirious. Jack, you can't get off this couch, okay? He says, okay. And I don't care what he says. I want you to stay. Sean says, Jack. And Topanga says, Sean's okay. He doesn't know what he's saying. It's the fever talking. Jack sits up again. That's not right. He doesn't really want to be friends with you because you broke up with Corey. That means you were never really friends. No friends. No friends at all. He falls backwards again. And Topanga says, though it seems to be a very perceptive fever, doesn't it? She looks back at Sean, who says nothing. And that is the end of the scene.
Aw, it's understandable.
Yes.
Because Sean and Corey have been best friends forever.
Their whole life.
However, it does make me sad, and you touched on this at the beginning, is that Sean and Topanga are also best friends or had that relationship. And it's, again, it sucks because it's just, yeah, it's breakup level. And then it's like, I don't know what to do. And I think it's still sad that Sean just still doesn't want to talk about it. It makes sense, but it's sad. And especially when there's this third party that's like, I can see this very clearly and I'm going to tell you what's up.
I'm sick and I can see everything that's going on.
What I do appreciate is also how Jack really cares about Topanga being there and helping him, because we barely see Jack and Topanga hanging out on screen. And so it's just fun that I know that they also probably, as castmates, like actually do hang out and do stuff backstage, or just with each other when they're not on set, as they all do. But like, it's cool when you get moments between people that don't typically interact with each other.
Yeah, it's very fun. Like, there's a moment in this season where like Jack is like coming into the house and says, hey, some girl is here to see you.
Yeah.
Because he just like doesn't know Topanga that well. There's like a moment where he says, I'm sure I'll get to know her. And if I don't, it's fine.
Yeah. Like,
so it's really fun to see like any dynamic that they get to have. And I'm sure it was fun for them because they don't get to play off each other very often.
What I'm now just remembering and piecing together is that the beginning of the show, Jack was in the show, and then he just appeared in the next scene and was like, I have chicken pox. And now I'm like, does the rest of the cast?
Oh, you're so right. I forgot about that too.
Like, I totally forgot that he's also in the A story for a moment.
Right. Well, that's what makes me think, like, how much time has passed that they're doing this show?
I mean, but you can't have chicken pox for like months, you know?
Right. And they're doing a completely different play now that Jack is clearly not in.
Maybe they just had to improvise because Jack had chicken pox. They're like, we don't have enough actors.
So we got to do a different play. It's King Lear now. Or it's Hamlet now. Not King Lear. It's Hamlet. It's Hamlet.
Yeah, it's wild. But I just remembered that. I'm like, wait, he was there.
Yeah, you're absolutely
right. Does anybody
right.
else have it?
I also forgot about that. That's so funny.
Ay-ay-ay.
Okay, so I think we're going to take a quick break now, but we'll be right back with more of Eric Hollywood after this.
Hello, everybody. It's Sid. Welcome to The Midroll, the spot where we do announcements, featured ads, and anything else that we want to talk about. First things first, if you like our show and any of the others on the network, please consider backing us at patreon.com/thescavengersnetwork. For just $2 a month, you can get access to hours and hours of bonus content, and every donation helps support us and the network. Second thing second, The Lost Years has some merch. You can get Nostalgia Buds stickers, hats, t-shirts, our sweet little idiot dad hat, a nostalgia notebook. Everything that I just mentioned is found on the Scavengers Network website. So if you go to www.scavengersnetwork.com/shop and then click on The Lost Years, you can get anything your heart desires. And if you do happen to own any of that said merch, share it with us, tag us, show it off. We would love to see it. If you've ever thought to yourself, hey, I want to be on this podcast, guess what? You can. In light of social media kind of being a hellscape nowadays, we want to start a new format for our nostalgia questions at the end of the show. All you need to do is go to our podcast website, anchor.fm/lostyearspod, and click on the button that says message. You can send us a clip of your own nostalgia answers, and we will include them at the end of our show. Now, In prepping for this segment, I went to go test this myself, and Spotify let me know that this feature is not going to be available anymore after June 2024. So the sooner we can do this, the better. But we would really like to hear from you. It makes our day to hear from you, our little nostalgia buds. So we'd love your participation if you are also down to do it. All right. Do you have water nearby? If not, you should go get some. And if you need a little snack, go ahead and treat yourself because you deserve it. Thank you for joining us. Let's get back to the episode.
Join us for Don't Feed the Plants, a limited series podcast discussing the 1986 movie musical Little Shop of Horrors, one song at a time, with media scholars, performers, and fans. So look out, look out, look out for Don't Feed the Plants.
And we're back on the soundstage. Feeny and Eric walk up and Frasier greets them and says, meet some of the cast of your new family for the next 100 episodes. I hope. Hey guys, this is Eric Matthews. He's going to be playing the role of the long lost brother. He's come all the way from Philadelphia to try out. So let's make him feel welcome. We see two actors who look suspiciously like Sean and Corey on a set that looks just like the Matthews living room. I think you see what's happening here. Frasier says, this is our star, Ben Sandwich. Maybe you've heard of his brother, Bread Sandwich. And he says, oh, from that show, and holds out his hand to shake. Ben stands up and says, hey, how you doing? And then pulls Eric close. Listen, let me tell you what the show is not, okay? It is not Long Lost Brother Gets Acquainted with the Universe, okay? Eric says, okay. And Ben walks away. Eric goes to introduce himself to Sean, the Sean-looking actor, whose name is Schneider, but we don't hear it for a second, but his name is Schneider. He is holding his knees and says, sometimes I get shy. People who aren't shy make me nervous. A Topanga-looking actress then bursts through a swinging door and goes, hi! And Schneider says, oh no, it's her. She walks up to Eric. Oh, are you the new guy? Hi, welcome, and hugs him. Have you met Schneider? Schneider is very shy. She hugs Schneider, who starts repeating, too close, too close, too close. She continues, deep down, I'm shy too. I'm a wounded bird. Schneider and me are wounded birds. Schneider whispers, help me. And Eric starts to back away. And a guy who looks like Jack walks up and puts his hand on his shoulder. Why they need you? And Eric's like, what? And guy continues, well, they got me already. Why they need you? Eric says, well, they just told me. And the guy cuts him off again. They got me. This doesn't make any sense. They got me. Why they need you? Where's my banana? Is it or is it not 2:15? He starts calling for a banana boy. And when he doesn't appear, he says, all right, mango boy, you're promoted, baby. And walks off. Eric says, nutty. Okay, Mr. Feeny, these people are. But Feeny is not with him anymore. He calls for Feeny, and then we cut over to see Feeny in a classroom set. You call this a classroom? There are only 9 desks. Are we supposed to believe there are only 9 students in the whole class? Frasier says, well, actually, camera angles appear to make it appear to be more. Feeny replies, that's diabolical. Frasier calls for everyone to get into costume, and Ben and Schneider stand up and switch the outer shirts they're wearing with each other, which is insane. This is just simply not something that would happen.
No.
They just switch shirts. During the switch, Ben is berating him. Maybe you can give me a little something to play off today, huh? You dead person, you silent freak. You know, I am so sick and tired of carrying this show. Schneider says, sorry, Mr. Sandwich, please don't be upset with me. I need this job so I can pay for college and get an education. Ben laughs and says, education? Son, listen, this show goes 4 years, they'll give you an honorary degree. You'll be Dr. Creepy Weirdo. Frasier calls for places and they start the scene. Dr. Creepy Weirdo is so intense and also just like a very good burn. I'm sorry. He calls for places and they start the scene. The characters are named Rory and Shane. Shane is suggesting Rory steal his father's car keys and credit card. Rory starts talking about how he has a bad feeling, but as Ben starts reading the script more, he gets upset. Oh man, we're doing this story again? He throws his script down. How many times have we done this, Matt? 100,000? Schneider shrieks. He's yelling again. Stop the yelling. Ben continues. You know, how can I learn so much every week and still be so stupid? Schneider covers his ears and cries, oh, make him stop, and starts rocking back and forth on the couch. Frasier's like, okay, we'll get the writers to fix it. Come on, Ben, we got the best writers in town, and gestures behind him. My favorite part of this is that Schneider runs away in the background of this shot. It's so funny. Ben yells, yeah, that's all I hear, Matt. They're young, they're hip, they're fun. Hey, he runs over to the writer's table, which is a table full of literal children with laptops, and yells, do your jobs. One of them starts to look pouty and continues, what's wrong? Did I hurt your feelings? Good, because you know what this script is? It's poopy. The fatty kid yells back, it's not poopy, you're poopy. And one of the girls goes, oh no, oh boy. And the kid next to the poopy kid goes, that was a good thing to say. Let's just watch what happens now. These kids are awesome. They're so funny. They have very good timing. Ben yells, all right, that's it. You're fired. All of you, get out and clean out your cubbies. He walks away, and as he goes, Poopy Kid yells, oh yeah? Well, you can kiss my diapered butt. And one of the kids, who's probably 12-ish, throws a pen down and says, I'm too old and too rich. Another little girl into a cell phone says, mommy, I'm fired again. The kids gather up their stuff, and Fraser says to usher a shocked and confused Eric into the next scene. Okay, Eric, you're playing Derek, right? The older, good-looking, not the sharpest knife in the drawer, long-lost brother with a heart of gold. You think you can play that? Eric says, can do, as he looks at the script. You don't mean real gold, right? And Fraser says, just like that. Are you ready to roll? As we say here in Hollywood, and action. Eric, in a Shakespearean tone, says, ouchie McOuchie, little bro. If I can't have my lucky tube socks, I shall never pass the astronaut test. Ben looks at him, and then at Fraser, very confused, and Fraser says, that was great, Eric. I personally loved it. Don't do it that way, okay? Don't do Shakespeare. Do you? Eric's confused. Don't do Shakespeare. All I've ever done is Shakespeare. Fraser says, do you? The role is you, Eric. Do you? Eric whispers, I don't know how to do that. Fraser says, just be honest. Acting is about honesty. Eric's like, so all I have to do is just stand up here and be honest. Fraser replies, that's it. And Eric says, I can do that. And Fraser says, all right, let's take it from Ben's line. And action. There's a big pause between and action in this moment. I'm not going to do it. Ben says, I'm really sorry, Derek, but I wash your lucky tube socks. He pulls a tiny pair of socks out of his pocket and well, shrugs. And Eric starts, you're not sorry. Ben goes, what? And Eric says, what, all of a sudden the cameras are on you and you're a different person? What's that all about? Ben again goes, what? But to Fraser, who also says, what? Eric continues, I just saw the way you were acting with the writers over there. You're just mean. Me thinks you shuck my socks on purpose. He breaks and says, like that? And Fraser yells, cut! And we get a hard cut to Feeny and Eric sitting on the stairs outside of the lot. They've just been, like, escorted out by security who was closing the soundstage door. Eric says, sorry for dragging you all the way out to California, Mr. Feeny. I had no idea the Windy City would be so cruel. Feeny replies, Eric, just because Mr. Fraser didn't like your performance and we got thrown out of the studio doesn't mean you weren't good. I mean, that's just one man's opinion. Eric asks, well, what's your opinion? Feeny says, same as his. But what you have to understand is that what comes easily goes just as easily. If you want to be an actor badly enough, you have to take classes, study for years, face rejection on a daily basis, and then, after 10,000 no's, there might be a glimmer of a chance that someone might say yes. Eric says, next I want to be the heavyweight champion of the world. Feeny says, let's go home. And Eric's like, okay. And they get up to go. And that is the end of the scene.
This whole scene is so funny.
It's really funny.
Because it's so unexpected. Like, when I first watched it, I wasn't aware in the last scene that it was Lindsay. Like, yeah.
It's
assumed,
harder to tell because she's sort of like, she looks different.
Right. And with this one, as soon as they got onto the set, it was just Ryder and Ben sitting there. And I was like, oh, okay. It threw me off, but it was so funny. And I mean, they're breaking the fourth wall so many times just in this. Yes. And it's actually very cool to see their soundstage and what it looks like. Because I'm fairly certain that this is the only time this happens. I'm assuming.
It is, yes.
Yeah. And so it is just, it's extremely meta. Like, everything is crazy. And I, again, just really love that it's another instance where you see them acting so differently than who they are, but also just like as their characters, because I'm assuming that they were not like the writers were not writing these characters.
Yeah. Their
as
actual
Ben.
Personalities. No, certainly not. Certainly not.
And so I bet it was also just really fun to be like, you are writing me, but it's not me.
Yeah.
And so it's just very funny. I was thinking the entire time, does Eric not realize that all of these people just look like his friends and family?
I know. That's so funny. They don't reference it at all, which is my favorite part about it. They're just like, and all of these people look like people you know, but we're not going to talk about it. And they're all, these are their names.
But yeah, all of them are fun. I think the funny thing is when Sean Schneider, like when they talk about him going to school and everything, I was thinking, and then he didn't end up going to school in real
life. I'm curious if they wrote that because they knew that he wanted to go to college.
Yeah.
And it's just like a call specifically to that because of the way that he says it. I need this job to get a good education, like to pay for college. Like he's so like little orphan Annie about it. And it's very funny.
Yeah, it's very good. I love that they call out that Ben specifically calls out the repetitive stories nature of Boy Meets World, because there's so many times where I'm like, the lesson is so much the same throughout the show, but it's very entertaining how they do it just in different ways. And so it's very funny to be like, these are all the same. And then to just go to the writers and then all of them being literal children, it's just so funny because in this world where just it's completely opposite and meta, it's like, they're obviously adults. I love just watching the kids be so into it, though.
The oldest kid being like maybe Ben's age when they started. Being like, I'm too old and too rich is so funny to me. Like the kids are great. The kids are great. The one who's like, let's just see what happens now. He's like very dramatically gesturing. Like they're so good.
I also just, I like that when all of the characters are so different, or the actors in this moment are so different than their characters, I do think it's really funny and on brand that the character that they're going for is Eric.
Is the same.
But he is like also just flipped. Like he just goes into Shakespeare mode, and it's really funny because they just want him to be him without knowing. But I love in that moment, I'm like, he's a Shakespearean actor. Just let him thrive in that environment. It's okay.
The fun part is he would have been really good at the Royal Shakespeare Company because that's all he knows how to do.
Yeah.
And he was like, I want to be on TV.
Because it's Eric.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was funny that he immediately got fired.
Just like, well, they said it was an audition, but like, why would they fly him out?
There's no way
to do an audition on the soundstage with the set. Like none of that would happen.
No, not at all. And I really just love that when he's talking to Feeny about it, it's like, what's your opinion? Same as his.
I also thought it was bad, which is very funny.
But yeah, it was just a very funny scene in general. I like when they just get to do fun stuff and not take things so seriously all the time.
Yeah.
And this is very clearly an episode that they do that.
It's really I also really like that, despite the fact that the like avatars of these characters are complete opposite like personality, they're just like not what you would expect, right, from the supposed actors on the scene, they are still playing like Sean and Corey, essentially. Like Shane and Rory. And I love watching actors get to play. Like that's really what it comes down to for me, is they're just having a fun little time, and so we get to have fun by virtue of watching that.
Every once in a while when Topanga and Sean, like Ryder and Danielle, have scenes together, or just in this moment, like when she bursts in the door and then is like very up close to him, I think of in Pod Meets World they were talking about Danielle shared that she had a crush on him, and whenever they're in that moment or those types of moments, I always think about that.
Like, are you thinking about your crush right now?
Yeah, like she's so close and like just gets to do that because like Ryder also liked her, and so it's funny because he's like, what?
Yeah, nobody knew. They worked together for 7 years and neither of them knew that they had a crush on each other. And that's the cutest thing. And it's just, you know, what could have been?
Yeah.
What could have been?
But now they're both married and they all have kids.
Now they're both married with children. Like, it's simply not happening. Okay, so the next scene, we are back at the apartment. Jack comes out of the back. He looks like he's feeling better and says, hey, bud, I'm going to go to the grocery store. Do you want anything? Sean is lying on the couch, still sort of seeming like he's under the weather. Unclear. No, thanks for asking. Jack says, you're welcome. Hey, you sure there's something you need, right? Like maybe to call up a friend and tell her you're sorry? Sean says, I don't know what you're talking about. And Jack's like, you know the one I mean. Come on, she took care of us. She was here for a couple of days. Now she hasn't been around. You know the one I mean. Her name rhymes with no schminga. Which is nothing. Sean says, it's not my fault, Jack. This is what happens when you're friends with a couple and they break up. You're forced to choose sides. And Corey's my best friend. Jack says, yeah, I'm sure she realizes that. Sean says, well, yeah, thanks to you. Jack's like, hey, my fever was like 112. I didn't know what I was saying. Sean says, it's okay. I'm sure she felt uncomfortable too. She's not coming back. Jack opens the door and Topanga is there and he says, yeah, you're probably right. Turns back to her. Hey, there's my favorite nurse. And he gives her a hug and a kiss on the cheek and says very earnestly, thank you. And heads out. Sean sits up and she says, look, I know you're in a tough situation. Corey's your best friend. He says, you know, he used to tell me how wonderful you were, but guys always say great things about their girlfriends until they break up. And that's when the truth comes out. You know, I've waited 15 years to find out what he really thinks about you. Do you want to know what he thinks about you now that you broke up? She says, Sean, I don't want to talk about that. You know, I just came here to tell you that you are an unappreciative little jerk. And if you're so uncomfortable around me that we can't be friends now that I'm not seeing Corey, then maybe we were never really friends at all. And I want you to tell me that to my face. He says, now that you've broken up, he still tells me how wonderful you are. He's completely brokenhearted over what he's lost. She says, so am I. He gets up. Corey's my best friend, but I want to tell you to your face that if I knew that you and I weren't friends anymore, that'd break my heart too. She smiles a little and says, you want soup? And pulls a can out of the bag that she brought with her. He says, will you feed it to me? And she nods and smiles and they hug. And that is the end of the episode proper.
It's very good. It's very just cute. A nice little closing scene.
Yeah.
After everything that we just saw in the last scene, it's nice to kind of bring it back down. It's like, oh yeah, it is Boy Meets World.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think what I like about this scene is, like, Topanga dropped everything to also just help Jack and Sean out with their sickness. Corey literally ran.
Well, because she knew also that they, like, they live by themselves.
Right.
So, like, who was there to take it? They don't have parents that are like, oh, darling, let me take it. Like, she's like, let me help you.
Yeah, well, and it's cool because, like, she did, she has had chicken pox before, so, like, she understands what it's going to be like. Yeah. And I
and
just,
also can't get it by being around them.
Yeah, and so it's nice because then it's just, you know, she's there for them. She does care about them more than just a friend level. It's like she does want to help them out.
Yeah.
So what I was saying earlier, like, couples and friendships are really fun until it's complicated, and then you have to figure out everybody's dynamic with each other. Mm-hmm. They just become so much harder, and that's just kind of how that goes, no matter what breakup level that is, because you're like, well, are we all good? Are we figuring this out? Like, what's going on? I like that she did come back, because even Sean didn't think that she would come back.
Yeah.
And what I was nervous about is what Sean was about to say when he's like, what he really thinks about you now that you broke up, like, you want to hear that? I was like, oh no. And but not that I like thought poorly of Corey or like thought that he was gonna say anything bad, because he like truly just loves Topanga so much and there's no way. But I was like, oh, like, don't say anything that's bad in this moment. And sure enough, you know, it's just talking about how amazing that Topanga is and how wonderful it is and how heartbroken he is. And what I like is that Topanga does agree with it, because it's like, it is hurting her too. Yeah. And like, she does have Angela, but it's like, Sean is also one of her best friends too. And so like, being able to talk about that, or like still having the friendships with each other, like, it's very important to her and to him too. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just like that Sean is sticking up for Corey too, because it's also a testament to their friend level and like sticking up for his best friend. But I love that he just brought it back around and is like, I don't want to lose you though too in that. And I just like that they're talking about it. It's very cute.
It's a very mature conversation to have when you're 17, 18 years old. Like, it feels like, I mean, the circumstances are obviously very different, right? Because they've been together for so long. But like, the idea that your best friend would break up with someone and you wouldn't immediately be like, all right, well, that person's out of my life forever, is like so just like mature. Like, I can't fathom being that young and also being able to have that mature of a conversation about truly anything, much less a situation this complex. So
yeah,
it's really fun writing. And I just love these characters. I love my little kids.
Yeah. And again, it's just, I know that Sean and Topanga are best friends, but I do like when they get to have moments too where Corey is not around. Yeah. And then they're able to talk about stuff too, because it's important. It's like, no, we need to show that they are also best friends and they exist on their own.
Also. Yeah.
Yes.
1000%. okay, so end credits. We are in the Matthew's kitchen. Eric is rifling through a laundry basket on the table as Corey comes downstairs and asks what he's looking for. Eric's sorry, there's one line at the end of the scene that I just love so much. Eric says, well, I'm supposed to shoot hoops and I can't find my lucky tube socks anywhere. Have you by chance seen them anywhere? And Corey says, you're going to find this kind of hard to believe, Eric. But last night, for no logical reason that you could possibly think of, I did the wash instead of mom. And well, this is so funny. Eric says, where are my lucky tube socks? And Corey pulls them out of his pocket. They are tidy and shrunken. Well, I don't think they're so lucky anymore. Will then breaks character and says, that's not the line. And Ben's like, what? And Will says, the line was, honey, I shrunk the tube socks. Ben says, oh, I know. I'm sorry, Will. I was just trying something new. And Will says, oh, you were just trying something new. Why don't you try this, huh? And starts throwing clothes out of the basket and like trashing the set and screaming about trying something new, and then yells that he quits, and then he's out of there and walks off set. Ryder then runs in. I love this because Ryder runs basically directly past Will to run into the scene, and then is also just confused by what's going on. Anyway, Ryder runs in and says, Corey, Eric, guess what? I blew up another mailbox. It's like one of my favorite lines in this whole show. It's just so funny. He blew up another mailbox. The idea that he would blow up another mailbox like 6 years later is so funny to me. And also for him to run and just, I blew up another mailbox. I like it so much. He sees the mess and then like flips out and says, did Will flip out again? And Ben confirms, what are we going to do? I mean, he's going to be hard to replace. Ryder agrees, and then they look off camera to see someone, and Ryder calls, hey, Banana Boy, you want to be a star? That's the end of the episode of Paul.
This is such a funny way to close out this episode too. It's just so bringing good. It back to the literal like metaverse that they have just within the show. But I was laughing about the fact of like they just started playing out the scene like normal, like just with the tube sock
like
joke.
End credit scene,
And I was like, oh, that's funny. And then it's just the fact that they flipped it back to being just the actors as opposed to the characters is so good. But I love Sean's line so much too, because one, it's just unexpected. He hasn't done this in forever.
He hasn't done any sort of like physical vandalism in a really long time. And so the idea that he had blown up another mailbox.
Well, and what I love is that I'm assuming, but like, because they made this joke about repetitive stories. I'm assuming that the writers have gotten some flack of like, it all sounds the same. And so for them to just have that little joke where Sean just runs in and is like, I did this thing again. I blew up a mailbox.
Also, the way that Ryder says this line, he like bursts and he's like, Corey, Eric, guess what? I blew up another mailbox.
It's just so unexpected for him to say it, too.
There's no way you can guess, like, what he's going to say in that moment if you haven't seen it. It's so random.
That's why I noted it, because I was like, what are you doing? For them, because, again, Will Friedle, I know we haven't, like, known him, but, like, having met him, he's also one of the nicest humans.
It's funny to be like, he would ever exhibit.
For it to be like, did Will flip out again? Like, there's no way. He's like again. One of the nicest humans. And so it's very funny to just have him playing, again, just another character. It's like, it's so not him, and I love it.
He does such a good job, too. Like, it's very scary. Ben is, like, cowering. He's, like, gotten clothes thrown at him and, like, silverware and plates. It's just, like, very dramatic. It's such a fun... It's, like, such a dramatic moment. And then for Ryder... Which Ryder... definitely would have heard. Like, he saw Will walk off the set. There's no way
like,
he didn't.
It's like he was so in his head with just like having to say the line
in the script. Yes. Oh my god, deeply in character, deeply in character. And he comes and says, I blew up another mailbox. I love it so much. I was so excited to get to these end credits, and I watched it like 4 times. It makes me so happy.
I also just love that they were talking to the kid off screen like, you want to be a star?
Like, yeah. Like, they could just replace Will with a random, like, PA, basically.
It's so funny.
Oh, my God. Oh, it's so funny. Anyway, what was the lesson, Sid?
So, I do think there are two, because there are two different things that happen.
Oh, love that.
Yeah. I think with the Topanga and Sean storyline, friendships take work no matter just what level you're at, and especially if you know you've got the couple thing or just in general, but it's like friendship is about communication and actually having to talk about stuff, and so I think that that's important. The second one with Eric, it only happened at the end with Feeny and him talking,
of course,
but he's talking about you gotta work hard for what you actually want in life.
Yeah,
and what they're talking about jobs here, or just like, you know, I don't really think that you need to have that lesson with jobs. It's like, it's right. Okay. It's a job. But I think in general, things that you want in life, just you got to work hard to get it. And yeah. I think that's important as well.
Ah, that's delightful.
Who would have thought on this episode I would have pulled two
lessons? Two lessons. She's so talented. She's listening. She's paying attention.
Whoop another mailbox. It's like not leaving my head now. It's just how he
says
it. It's
so funny. It's literally so funny. It's so funny. It's so funny. I love it so much. It's like one of the funniest things that's happened in the show, and I love it so much. Oh man. When I remembered this episode was like in this like sequence, basically I was like, oh, the mailbox thing is in this episode. I'm so excited.
It's just funny too, because out of every vandalism or like crime that Sean has done in the past, right, like being a bad kid, it's just very funny to go back to that one of all things from season one, being like, it's a mailbox, it's blown up.
It's like a very pivotal episode in season one. It's a very good episode, and I love that episode, and it's so funny to call back to it in this way. It's perfect. I love it so much.
It's a good show.
Well, hey, welcome to the end of the episode. We did it.
And if you would like to keep up with us on social media, you can find us on Twitter, Blue Sky, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at The Lost Years Pod. We reshare when the episodes drop. And yep,
we sure do. You can also email us at thelostyearspod@gmail.com. We'll read your email on the show. Tell us what you're nostalgic for. Tell us what you're listening to. I've been using Spotify a lot lately, which I already use, but like my best friend's getting really into it because she was on Apple Music. And so now I think about Spotify a lot. So, hey, send me a playlist. Hey. I'd love to hear what you're listening to.
Yeah.
You can also rate us and write a review on Apple Podcasts or subscribe and subscribe. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts. Helps us out. Helps people find the show. I'm not doing it again. I like it.
Yeah, and we like the Scavengers Network. So thank you to them for having us on the network. You can check out other cool shows there, like Myth Takes and Side Character Quest on www.scavengersnetwork.com.
If you want to find me on the internet, I am all the places at Tay Crow. Not all of them, most of them. But if you search it and it's TAYYCRO, that's me. So,
all right.
you can also find me on Twitch one day. Eventually.
Didn't happen this week.
It didn't happen this week, and that's not my fault, okay? There is a lot of things happening, and unfortunately I couldn't make it work, but you know, one day my computer's so like not able to handle streaming and gaming at the same time, and I have to upgrade it.
Yeah.
And I can't do my taxes because I'm waiting on 1099, so I don't have any money, so it's just a waiting game right now, but it's fine. One day I will be on Twitch, and that Twitch will be twitch.tv/itstaycrow, so, you know, follow me for the future, I guess.
Yeah. I'm everywhere on the internet at Sudsley.
Amazing. I always talk for so long during that, and then Sid just says Sudsley and leaves it alone, and I'm like, should I say less? Sid says so little. Should I say less? But I never will.
I'm just there. I post
stuff. I love to talk. Okay. That's the end of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. This was fun. I had fun.
Fun.
Thanks for podcasting with me. Okay. Until next time.
Your day.
Your Sid.
Just like it's always been.
What else do you need to know?
Goodbye, fam.
Bye, fam.
The Scavengers Network.
Creator-driven, community-focused, treasured content.